Welcome to Food for Thought, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Listen now as your host, Jolie Root, sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. And now, here's your host, Jolie Root.
Listening to me for any length of time, you know I talk a lot about good versus bad fats. But there was a really interesting and kind of bothersome study in the Journal of Molecular Psychiatry, and what it suggests is that stress erases the benefits of eating good fats. So it basically said, and it's more evidence that stress really matters as far as health is concerned. This was a study that was done in the Department of Psychiatry and Psychology at Ohio State University, and what they found was that stress cancels out the benefits of eating healthier fats. So the Heart Association provides guidelines for consuming fats, and they do note that dietary fats are critical for energy, for cell growth. They protect the organs, they keep the body warm. And if you're a Food for Thought listener of any length of time, I talk a lot about the benefits of healthier fats, whether or not certain fats impact cholesterol levels, the benefits of following a Mediterranean diet, and how monounsaturated fats and things like avocado, olive oil, walnuts, and also polyunsaturated fats that are found in fish oils lower the bad cholesterol levels. These are good fats. Fats from foods like fish and nuts and oils like olive oil, these are the good guys. As a rule of thumb, the Heart Association doesn't like saturated fat. Now, I may have my differences with them about some of the dangers of saturated fat, but still, here at Ohio State University, the people there in psychiatry and psychology were well aware that diet and stress change inflammation levels in the body, and inflammation is linked to heart disease, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, and other chronic health conditions, some of which are some of our biggest and most challenging health conditions. But they wanted to look at the interaction between stress and the diet and measurable markers of inflammation in the bloodstream. And so to carry out their investigation, they enrolled almost 60 women, so 50 plus women. They were average age 53 years old. 38 of these women were breast cancer survivors. And they challenged them with breakfast. So one of two breakfasts. One that was made with a lot of saturated fat, or an identical one that was made primarily with the monounsaturated fat, which would be the leading type of fat in the Mediterranean diet. And then they asked the women about their previous day's experiences, and they used something called a daily inventory of stressful events. It's a questionnaire that helps a person understand, that helps the researcher understand whether or not the subject was stressed or not. And they discounted minor irritants, but they looked at more significant stressors, and they measured pre-meal blood levels of inflammatory markers. And what they found was that the women who ate the bad fat had much higher readings in the negative markers that are predictive of a higher likelihood of plaque building up in the arteries, for example. But in the women who had had stressful days, the difference between good fat and bad fat vanished. So people who were eating then a more carefully crafted diet but were under a lot of stress scored as badly as if they had eaten a high-calorie, high-fat, fast food meal. So the reality is there was no difference in calories between the two breakfasts. Each breakfast had 930 calories and 60 grams of fat. That's like having a Big Mac and medium fries. But we know that a less healthy meal is going to have adverse effects on markers of inflammation. What we didn't know was that the benefit of the healthy meal would be wiped out by being under stress. So this is just, I guess, a cautionary tale that we really need to pay attention to levels of stress in our days as we go through our days. And when we're feeling very stressed, taking steps to reduce the impact of that stress is probably something that is warranted. Now, I saw Medscape report a study that I want to share with you. It has to do with the omega-3 DHA. It's in fish, and so if you're good about eating fish a few times a week, you're probably getting a fair amount of DHA, dietary DHA. I recommend supplementing with DHA because DHA is the brain fat. It's the one that helps us be more clear. It's the one that helps us with recall, with focus and concentration. And it really supports the healthy aging of the brain. At my age, this is something that I'm concerned about. But for all of us, it should be something to be concerned about, because the sooner we start working for a brighter future where our brain is concerned, nutritionally speaking, the better off we will be. But this was a study of cognitively healthy older adults, and they measured blood levels of the omega-3 DHA. And this is what they found. They found that higher serum DHA levels were associated with less cerebral amyloid deposits. Amyloid is this protein. It's in the brain, but when you have too much of it, it can turn on you, basically, and it is linked to Alzheimer's and the plaques that form in the brains of people with Alzheimer's. So keeping amyloid levels lower is a goal for all of us. So what they found was that people with very low serum DHA levels had bigger, more telling deposits of amyloid and amyloid plaques. Even though they didn't have evidence of dementia, these adults had these plaques that were forming in the brain. They also had better memory scores if they had higher DHA levels and less regional brain atrophy. So less shrinking of the brain, and DHA is the most abundant polyunsaturated fat in the brain. It plays a very important structural role in the synapses. It modulates signaling pathways. This is so scientific sounding, but it's not. It's about better structure means better function in all the tissues of the body, but in the brain, better structure means better signaling. So what that is cell-to-cell communication. It's just like I'm talking to you right now. Our brain has communication across all of the circuitry of the brain, all of the cerebral wiring and networks of nerve cells in the brain. And the brain cells communicating with one another are our thoughts and our responses and our emotions. And so DHA is associated with better conversations from nerve cell to nerve cell in the brain, more memory retrieval, better cell signaling, not to mention it's protective. Should you have a trauma, if you hit your head, if you have a concussion, you have a better prognosis if you have got DHA on board in the neuronal pathways, because then what happens when there's an injury is DHA forms protective molecules that reduce inflammation around the injury and reduce the kind of damage that happens when there's an interruption of blood flow in areas of the brain. So ischemia or starvation for oxygen can happen when we have a head trauma. And DHA converts to neuroprotectin D1. It's a metabolite that's formed from DHA, and that reduces the inflammation and it reduces the damage from the trauma. And so what this is telling us is the benefits of seafood consumption on Alzheimer's disease risk factors, but also just on the very straightforward function of the brain as we get older. Higher DHA, better brain function. Higher DHA at every age is equated with better brain function, including if your mom had really great DHA levels while you were in the womb, while you were developing your brain. The very activity of building a brain during pregnancy is a DHA omega-3 dependent activity. So brain DHA levels are modulated by seafood intake and by diet. So choosing to have at least two meals a week of cold water fish, salmon, sardines, mackerel, but really pretty much any fish with the exception of a few. So tilapia happens to be a low omega-3 fish, but pretty much any other fish is going to give you some DHA, even including something like shellfish, like shrimp. So it reduces amyloid, that reduces the toxic burden in the brain, and supports brain function, and helps us understand our risk for cognitive decline by having better DHA levels. Now, if you're just not a lover of fish, if you're just not a fish eater, take a DHA supplement. My sponsor, Carlson Laboratories, makes something called Super DHA. It's 500 milligrams of DHA in one easy-to-swallow soft gel. I recommend 2 to 3 a day for people who are over the age of 40. There is some corresponding EPA, but we really want to go after the DHA for cognitive function. This is Food for Thought. DHA is food for thought, quite literally. And I'm going to be right back after these messages, so please stay with me.
About Carlson Super 2 Daily?
No doubt you've heard about the benefits of eating more fish, but most of us don't eat omega-3 rich fish every day. Carlson Super 2 Daily is like having a serving of light tuna when you take your multivitamin. Take your vitamins, minerals, and a dose of Heart Smart omega-3s all in one formula, two soft gels. Carlson Super 2 Daily. It's the perfect foundation for your supplement program. Carlson Super 2 Daily is a comprehensive, balanced formula supplying essential vitamins and minerals in just two easy-to-swallow soft gels. Plus, Carlson Super 2 Daily provides the omega-3s, EPA, and DHA to support the heart, nerves, brain, and the eyes. Purity, potency, and freshness are always guaranteed. Look for Carlson Super 2 Daily at finer health food stores today.
Why is vitamin D so important? Because it supports and promotes calcium absorption, healthy bones, healthy mood, cardiovascular health, and a healthy immune system. Are you getting enough vitamin D? It's important to us. Carlson features many products with vitamin D, including vitamin D soft gel in capsules, liquid drops, and vitamin D in combination with fish oils. Carlson provides natural vitamin D3 to support healthy body levels of vitamin D. Ask for Carlson Vitamin D at finer health food stores today. Or go to CarlsonLabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson is an easy way to get your vitamin D.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. Scott. I'm your host, Jolie Root. I'm a nutritionist. I work for Carlson Laboratories. I'm their senior nutritionist and educator. I've been doing nutrition education since the early 1980s, so I've been around for a while. And I go out and do a lot of public speaking and also these radio programs and a lot of education in the community all over North America. And sometimes I'm lucky enough to get to go to some more exotic places like the Canary Islands or Norway or Stockholm for conferences. And there's one question that comes up quite often when we're talking about the benefits of eating fish, which you know I'm an advocate of eating fish. And the question is, should I be avoiding fish because of the mercury? No. Fish is one of the healthiest foods that you can eat. It's a great source of protein. It's a great source of a lot of micronutrients and also the healthy fats. But some types of fish do contain high levels of mercury, and mercury exposure has been linked to some serious health problems. Does this mean you need to avoid fish? Well, I don't think so, but let's talk about this for a couple of minutes. The reason mercury is a problem is because it's a toxic heavy metal, and it's in the environment. It's found in air, water, in the soil. It's released into the environment through industry. Burning coal releases mercury, but there are natural occurrences. A volcano erupting can release mercury into the environment. So there's elemental mercury, there's inorganic, and there's organic mercury. And people are exposed to mercury in a lot of different ways. You can breathe in mercury vapors doing industrial work or if you're a miner, but you can also be exposed by eating fish and shellfish, because fish and shellfish are exposed to low concentrations of mercury because of water pollution. And over time, the mercury can concentrate in their bodies. And it's usually in the organic form, which is known as methyl mercury, which is highly toxic and can cause serious health problems when it reaches certain levels in the body. Now, some fish are just way too high in mercury, and many types of fish contain mercury. One study found that a third of fish that were caught on the Jersey Shore had mercury levels higher than 0.5 parts per million, and that's a level that could cause health problems for people that eat the fish regularly. Now, when you look at things, the larger and the longer lived fish tend to have the highest mercury levels, and they include shark, swordfish, fresh tuna, marlin, king mackerel, in the Gulf of Mexico, which is closer to where I live, tilefish. See, larger fish tend to eat smaller fish, and the smaller fish have small amounts of mercury, but in the larger fish, the mercury levels accumulate over time. It's known as bioaccumulation. So remember that we're looking at 0.5 parts per million. Swordfish is 0.995 parts per million. Shark is 0.979 parts per million. So what we think of is that we want to eat a variety of fish, but we can eat fish that have lower amounts of mercury. And one of the ways to do that is to look for the fish that are the lowest. Salmon is one of those. Shrimp are very low. Cod is low mercury. Sardines are low mercury. And then 2 to 3 servings of fish. Tuna, we only recommend tuna once or twice a week, watching out, you know, for excessive levels of mercury. But eating a variety of fish, the benefit of eating fish actually outweighs the negative impact of mercury, according to most health experts. Now, if you want the fatty acid benefits of fish, like the EPA and DHA, I mentioned DHA earlier today talking about the ongoing health of the brain, then you can take a fish oil supplement that has been tested and found to be free of detrimental levels of mercury and other contaminants. This is how my long-standing relationship with Carlson Laboratories, my sponsor and for whom I now work, this is how it all got started. I was a nutritionist, I was in private practice, and I really appreciated all of the third-party testing that Carlson did with their fish oils to demonstrate a lack of detrimental toxins in the fish oils. So even if I wanted to get the omega-3s on a daily basis from eating fish, if I wanted to eat fish every day, I knew that maybe I was going to end up with higher levels of mercury than I felt comfortable about, because exposure to heavy metals like mercury has been linked to depression, anxiety, and other cognitive diseases. So knowing that the nutritional benefits that I get from fish outweigh the risks is comforting, but also knowing that I can get daily omega-3 from a non-mercury source like the Carlson omega-3 supplements is extremely comforting, and ended up with me doing lectures for them, spokesperson, that kind of thing, and finally, ultimately, as their senior nutritionist. So one place that you can go to take a look at your brand of fish oil, and you're hopefully going to find it there, is the IFOS, the International Fish Oil Standards, their program's website. So Google I, F as in fish, O-S as in safe, I-F-O-S, and you'll see the International Fish Oil Standards as probably one of the top results when you put IFOS into a search engine. And then take a look. There are reports there. They're called Consumer Reports. Now, this is a testing organization. This is actually the global standard for third-party testing of fish oil supplements. And you find out not just about mercury, but about many other potential pollutants and also oxidation markers, products of oxidation, which is a free radical process that happens in fats, and we don't want to introduce oxidized fats into tissues in the body, or even, you know, finally into the interiors of cells. So this kind of information is really beneficial, and the Consumer Reports at IFOS review not just Carlson reports are there for the Carlson omega-3s, but lots of other companies who are very serious about high quality fish oils use the International Fish Oil Standards program. So it's soothing and a good thing when you find your fish oil there. It's a cause for concern if you don't. So, you know that the fish oil that you're taking, if you are a fish oil consumer, know that it has been tested, and don't take that company's word for it. Go to an independent source for finding that information. The International Fish Oil Standards Program is exactly that. Speaking of toxins, there was a kind of a troubling study that showed up in Science Daily this week, and it looked at chemical exposure and vitamin D levels in a very large group of United States adults. The chemicals EDC, these are chemicals or mixtures of chemicals that cause adverse health effects by interfering with hormones in the body. Endocrine disruptor chemicals is what that stands for. And there have been 1,300 studies, more than 1,300 studies, that have found connections between chemical exposure to these endocrine disruptors and health problems, including infertility, including premature puberty, obesity, diabetes, neurological problems, and hormone-related cancers. Now, almost all of us have been exposed to BPA, bisphenol A, and another class of endocrine disruptors called phthalates. So the possibility is that we all have been exposed to these chemicals. They're in plastics, and all of us use plastics. But as it turns out, these endocrine disruptors, one of the things that gets disrupted is vitamin D levels. It turns out that exposure to these chemicals reduces vitamin D levels in the body. So they looked at the nutrition, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, between the years of 2005 and 2010. The participants provided blood samples so that their vitamin D levels could be measured. So this isn't opinion, this is something that was actually observed. And they had their urine analyzed for substances that are left behind after the body metabolizes phthalates and bisphenol A. And they found that the larger amounts of phthalates and BPA a person had been exposed to, the lower it was likely their vitamin D levels were in the bloodstream. So participants who were only exposed to small amounts of these endocrine-disrupting chemicals had stronger levels of vitamin D. And the link between these chemicals that we get exposed to in the water, but also from use of plastics, the link was strongest in women. So it's just something to know. And it's a good reason to look for an alternative to that plastic water bottle. If you like to carry water around, find something that's BPA-free. You can go in Whole Foods, you can go in Vitamin Shop, you can go in most of the natural markets, and they do sell BPA-free water bottles that you can carry to work and carry around in the car with you. It's just not a good idea to drink water from plastic bottles, especially if you leave them in the car and they get really hot during this time of year. That releases some of those chemicals. So it's interesting to me that environmental influences, kind of like talking about stress in the first segment, that stress or environmental influences can undo some of the healthiest habits that we have. For example, by lowering vitamin D levels, by reversing the impact of a healthy diet. So we do really need to pay attention to the environment that we live in and whether or not we're doing ourselves a favor with some of our daily habits. And vitamin D is just so important. So if your physician doesn't order a vitamin D level for you when you get a checkup, request it. It's easy to do. You're going to draw blood anyway to get a CBC, so you might as well get a vitamin D level tested while you're at it. This is Food for Thought. I will be right back after these messages.
Our brain is composed of millions of cells, diligently working, communicating, and providing the clear connections for our memory. Phosphatidylserine is a major component of brain and neural cells, and on the cutting edge of research. We find that by nourishing the body and mind with phosphatidylserine, we may be supporting clearer brain connections. Phosphatidylserine can generate, transmit, and participate in a variety of nerve impulses and brain functions, supporting our memory. Now, Carlson Laboratories offers phosphatidylserine in an easy-to-swallow soft gel. Carlson provides 100 milligrams of phosphatidylserine as a dietary ingredient to nourish the body and the mind. Available at finer health food stores, Carlson brings you the finest in natural vitamins, minerals, and specialty supplements. The choice is clear. Carlson Phosphatidylserine.
Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. Most American diets are low in cold water fish that are abundant in important omega-3 oils. DHA and EPA are the vital components of fish oil that provide healthy benefits. Not only are they crucial for brain and vision development, they're very important for cardiovascular health. Carlson, America's leading Norwegian fish oil brand, specializes in both great-tasting soft gels that are easy to swallow and fish oil liquids that don't taste fishy. That's right. Carlson provides the most extensive line of fish oils to meet all your needs. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today. That's right, ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Root. I have a blog. It's Red Wine, Green Tea, and Dark Chocolate. You can find that at jolieblogs.com, J-O-L-I-E-B-L-O-G-S. I'm also on Twitter, Jolie Root, on Twitter, J-O-L-I-E-R-O-O-T. And Food for Thought Radio has a Facebook page, too. So there's lots of ways to keep up with me out there on social media. Speaking of vitamin D, as I was just before the break there, vitamin D levels in pregnant women could be linked to some learning disabilities in children. How did we come about this information? Well, if you have a birthday in October, November, or December, or children who are born in those months actually have a more likelihood of learning disabilities because they were conceived between January and March. That's the time of year where there's insufficient sunlight to produce vitamin D. This was published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. It was written in collaboration with the University of Cambridge. It just found that there was a higher rate of learning disabilities in children that are winter conception babies. Warmer weather, higher levels of vitamin D, fewer learning disabilities is the way that it worked out. And the overall difference was due to autism and intellectual difficulties and learning difficulties like dyslexia. There were not seasonal patterns for other issues like visual or hearing problems or physical illness, but it's kind of an interesting observation. And the autism thing is interesting because we have been looking at the role of one of the neurotransmitters, serotonin, and autistic children have a serotonin abnormality where they have high body levels of serotonin but low brain levels of serotonin. That's something that's a common finding with autistic children. Well, it turns out that vitamin D is necessary for the production of serotonin. Vitamin D activates an enzyme in the brain. The enzyme is called tryptophan hydroxylase, and it's an enzyme that helps the brain form serotonin from a dietary component called tryptophan. It's an amino acid. It's in proteins that we eat. So the brain takes tryptophan, and this enzyme, tryptophan hydroxylase, sort of activates the tryptophan and helps it metabolize into first 5-hydroxytryptophan and then serotonin. And so without activated vitamin D, the hormone form of vitamin D, that tryptophan enzyme doesn't work effectively. So low serotonin levels occur. Now, low serotonin levels are also associated with depression and some other issues. But I find it really fascinating to think about the seasonality of when children are born, relatively, you know, directly related to when they were conceived and whether or not the mom had sufficient vitamin D. A lack of vitamin D impairs brain development. And so that is something to know if you're planning a pregnancy. Measure vitamin D levels. It's, again, something that's very easy to do. And if you find that you have low vitamin D levels, correct that. Vitamin D is a very inexpensive and widely available supplement that can be taken on a daily basis with absolute safety. The levels can be measured. There's no reason to take too much, but there are some definite costs to having too little. So vitamin D levels, very, very interesting. Now, if you follow nutrition news, you no doubt have been hearing about this kind of shameful situation that occurred all the way back in the 1960s with nutrition research and the industry-funded studies that set out to absolve sugar from having played any kind of strong role in heart disease. In the 1960s, deaths from heart disease here in the U.S. reached a peak, and researchers were divided on what the primary dietary contributors to the condition was. What were those contributors? Was it sugar or was it fat? Well, for decades now, studies have blamed fat, of course, but recent research finds that the sugar industry probably played a pivotal role in the blaming of fat. University of California, San Francisco researchers have reignited this debate. They published in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine, a report that revealed the discovery of that was published in the 1960s that was funded by the Sugar Research Foundation, which is the sugar industry. The funding wasn't disclosed. This is a big conflict of interest. And having conflict of interest disclosure didn't happen until the 1980s. And there's evidence that the researchers in this 50-year-old study were paid to shift the focus away from the harms of sugar intake. The nutritionists, and they were at Harvard Medical School nutritionists, they were paid off by the sugar industry. It's scandalous. And what they found, they ignored sugar. They ignored the studies that identified a link between table sugar and heart disease. And they published a conclusion saying that lowering the intake of fat was the only way to keep cholesterol levels low and prevent coronary heart disease. And so what this suggested, of course, to policymakers was that a high-sugar diet didn't play a major role in heart disease. Well, today we know that's completely wrong. And it is scandalous that this one very biased study has such strong continued influence on health policy and health recommendations. Now, we finally have come around to the idea that sugar is a real problem, but this brings up a bigger point, which is industry-funded studies, that it remains a problem. And there's almost no transparency about that. So, you know, the tobacco industry is another good example. In the journal Circulation in 2007, it was revealed that the tobacco industry funded studies in the 1990s to play down the harms of secondhand smoke exposure, to try to stave off the smoke-free laws that were happening around the country. Coca-Cola developed a nonprofit organization called the Global Energy Balance Network, who claimed that its lack of exercise rather than the unhealthy consumption of sugared beverages that causes weight gain. So we really need to know that interpreting research, we need to look for the connections, and we need to find out if industry is funding the research. Yes, there are grants from government organizations and there are grants from charities, but in drug development research, the bulk of the funding comes from the pharmaceutical industry, which is why we pay these ridiculously high prices for medications. But we have to be very careful about bias in research. Now, since sugar has shown up to be the problem that it is, we have started looking at diets that change the way that the body fuels itself, ketogenic diets. They've become incredibly popular. They're higher in fat and very low in carbohydrate, and they really do work as far as weight loss is concerned. They do very well. But there are health conditions aside from weight. There are health conditions that benefit. There are a number of them that may benefit from a ketogenic diet. And one of the ways that you can raise levels of ketones rather than blood sugar is to supplement with a medium-chain triglyceride oil. You find it in the sports nutrition section. You can find it in capsule form, but you can also find it in liquid form. And what that does, especially if you really control the count, your carbohydrates, and keep the number very low, it helps the body to form ketones, and the ketones act as an alternative fuel source, and you burn fat. But ketogenic diets are out there. They're very popular. One of the conditions that benefits from ketosis or a ketogenic diet is epilepsy. Epilepsy is a disease that causes seizures because of excessive brain activity. And anti-seizure medications are effective for some people, but some people don't respond to those medications or can't tolerate the side effect of those medications. And epilepsy has a really high level of evidence to support following a ketogenic diet to reduce the numbers of seizures. Seizures typically improve in about half of epilepsy patients who follow the classic ketogenic diet. The classic ketogenic diet is a 4-to-1 ketogenic diet. It provides four times as much fat as the combination of protein and carbs. And a doctor should recommend this diet for people who have epilepsy, and a dietitian should help to craft the diet so that you really know that you're doing it right. But the ketogenic diet may have benefits on the brain in addition to seizure control in people who are epileptic. When researchers examined the brain activity of children with epilepsy, they found improvements in various brain patterns in 65% of those children who were following a ketogenic diet, whether or not they had fewer seizures. So epilepsy is one condition. Another condition that responds really well to a ketogenic diet is metabolic syndrome. Sometimes we call it prediabetes. It's characterized by insulin resistance. And you're diagnosed with it if you have a large waistline, elevated triglycerides, low HDL, high blood pressure, or elevated fasting blood sugar. And a ketogenic diet improves many features of metabolic syndrome. It's time for another break. This is Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Root, and I'll be right back after these messages.
Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. And most American diets are low in important omega-3 oils. Omega-3 oils are the vital components of fish that provide numerous health benefits. Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems supply concentrated amounts of these omega-3 oils that are needed to support vision, brain function, and a healthy heart. Each great-tasting Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gem Soft Gel contains 1,250 milligrams of fish oil from deep, cold-water fish. That supplies a full 800 milligrams of omega-3s, all in only one easy-to-swallow soft gel. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for they are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Ask for Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems at your favorite natural food retailer today.
Concerned about diabetes? Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes is a unique formula containing nutrients that support the health of individuals with diabetes or pre-diabetes. Two easy-to-swallow soft gels supply over 25 nutrients, including important omega-3s from fish oil. Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes supports a healthy heart, brain, and nerves, healthy vision, and healthy circulation.
Ask for Carlson Nutri-Support Diabetes at finer health food stores today. Or go to carlsonlabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson Nutri-Support Diabetes. Ask for it today.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Root, and I have still a good segment ahead for you, sharing health information. When you look at your multivitamin bottle the next time, and I hope you're taking one, I do hope you're taking one, I want you to check for the presence of something, whether or not your multi has vitamin K, and specifically what form of vitamin K. You're looking for vitamin K2. And the reason why you want vitamin K, a lot of people realize that vitamin K works together with vitamin D to support better bone density. So that's one of the reasons why you want to be paying attention to whether or not you're getting some vitamin K. But there also was a really interesting finding that was part of the EPIC study in Europe. It's the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition study. And what they found was increased intakes of vitamin K2, their menaquinones, may reduce the risk of mortality from coronary heart disease. So the form of vitamin K, it could be MK4, it could be MK7. And what they found was, and this is building on evidence from the Rotterdam study, which was an earlier study, and the Prospect EPIC study in 2009. Rotterdam was 2004, Prospect EPIC was 2009, and now we're looking at this new EPIC nutrition cohort, was that the MK7, vitamin K2 as MK7, the link has been established between this form of vitamin K and cardiovascular health, and specifically improving your K status. Vitamin K2 results in less calcification of the arteries and soft tissues, leading to improved long-term health outcomes. So sometimes when you look on your vitamin bottle, you're looking and you see vitamin K, it's phylloquinone. That's phyllo. That's vitamin K1, and that's also the vitamin K that's found in green leafy vegetables like lettuce and broccoli and spinach. That's about 90% of the vitamin K that's in the typical Western diet. But you're looking for vitamin K2, the menaquinones, M-E-N-A quinones, menaquinones. That's only about 10% of the typical vitamin K consumption in the diet, but it's produced in the gut when you have beneficial bacteria, which is another reason why probiotics are so important. So, you know, probiotics help us to produce some of the B vitamins and vitamin K, and so these forms of vitamin K are found in animal meat and in fermented food products like cheese, and there's a Japanese food product called natto. And that's the kind of K that you're really looking for. And you can take a vitamin K to supplement, MK4, MK7, these are the terms that you're looking for, but less of the calcium deposits that are found in coronary heart disease. It's a benefit of vitamin K. So vitamin K is something to look for when you're looking at your label on your multivitamin. Now, if you are curious about those blood levels, the measurable levels of inflammation that I mentioned earlier, and you're getting a blood test anytime soon, something that you want to look for is your inflammation score on a chemical called C-reactive protein. This is another test that you can ask for. And a C-reactive protein level, you want less, you want 1 to 3 milligrams or less, and the result can help your doctor talk to you about a strategy to lower C-reactive protein levels. Now, the things I talk about every week on this program are things that help to keep that and other inflammatory chemicals in check. So the fish oils, the vitamin D, vitamin E reduces C-reactive protein levels. So a lot of the nutrients that are probably in your supplement regimen, if you have a good supplement regimen, are probably keeping your C-reactive protein levels in check. And then there are foods and dietary mistakes, if you will, such as the consumption of sweetened beverages that boost C-reactive protein levels. So don't be that person. Drink unsweetened tea, drink water, don't drink the sugared lattes and beverages, because that really does promote inflammation in the body, and that's just not a great idea. You really want to be on a pathway of anti-inflammation as much as possible. And speaking of pathways, are you a walker? Do you walk? Because there are such benefits to getting into the habit of walking on a daily basis. I talked about pre-diabetes briefly, and that's one of the ways to turn that situation back around again is to get into the habit of walking an hour a day. Literally walking your way back to healthier metabolic function. There's so many good benefits of walking. Walking counteracts the effects of weight-promoting genes. At Harvard, they looked at 32 obesity-promoting genes in more than 12,000 people to determine what the influence of these genes was on body weight, and then they discovered that among the study participants that walked briskly for about an hour a day, the effects of those genes, the obesity genes, were cut in half. Walking helps to tame a sweet tooth. A couple of studies found that even a 15-minute walk can curb cravings for chocolate and reduce the amount of chocolate that you eat in stressful situations. And the latest research shows us that walking can reduce cravings for a whole variety of sugary snacks. So keeping that sweet tooth tamed is another benefit of walking. Walking reduces the risk of developing breast cancer. Researchers already know that any kind of physical activity helps to negate a risk of breast cancer, but an American Cancer Society study that zeroed in on walking found that women who walked 7 or more hours a week had a 14% lower risk of breast cancer than those who walked 3 hours or less per week. And walking provided the protection even for the women with breast cancer risk factors, such as being overweight or using supplemental hormones. Walking also eases joint pain. Lots of studies have found that walking reduces arthritis-related pain, and that walking 5 to 6 miles a week can even prevent arthritis from forming in the first place. Walking protects the joints, especially the knees and the hips, which are most susceptible to osteoarthritis, by lubricating those joints and strengthening the muscles that support them. Walking boosts immune function. Also, walking can help protect you during cold and flu season, which is coming up. It's coming. I know it feels really warm now, but it won't be much longer. A study of over 1,000 men and women found that those that walked at least 20 minutes a day, at least 5 days a week, had 43% fewer sick days than people who exercised once a week or less. And if they did get sick, it was for a shorter duration. The walkers were not sick as long, and their symptoms were milder. So walking is just such a good idea. So how do you stay on track if you want to walk on a regular basis? It's easy, by the way, except for the great pair of shoes that you need. It's free, can be done just about anywhere. But sometimes it's tempting to skip. So if you're in danger of not keeping your promise to yourself about walking on a daily basis, you need a backup plan. So if you sleep in or you miss your morning walk, you know that you're going to walk at lunch instead. Have a backup plan in place. Or maybe you know that you're going out tonight with friends, so you're not going to take that evening stroll. Sneak in a walk in the morning and another one before you meet your friends. Keep a pair of sneakers in your car. It gives you the option to squeeze in a walk wherever you happen to be whenever you have a little extra time. You can tie your walking to regularly scheduled activities, like right after you get up in the morning or as part of your lunchtime. You know, we get used to brushing our teeth at a certain time of day, and we can get used to walking at a certain time of day also. Having a dog can keep you walking. People that have dogs walk more. So if you're up for the many different kinds of responsibilities that are involved with having a dog, that could be a catalyst that turns you into a habitual walker. But so let's say you can't commit, or you live someplace where you can't have a pet. You can volunteer at your local shelter and see if they need a volunteer walker, because those dogs need to be walked, and you need to be walked too. So that's another thought if you just can't take a pet in. You can read and walk. No, not by carrying a book while you're walking, but listening to audio books is a great way to get out and walk, and that time just flies by. Especially if you make an agreement with yourself that you can only listen to an audio book during your walks in order to provide motivation. If you're outdoors, obviously, keep the volume low or just put one of your earphones in so that you're alert to your surroundings. You need to be alert to your surroundings when you're out walking, but audiobooks are a way of sticking with it. Another way is music. Music has been shown to inspire exercisers to go longer and harder. Just about any music that inspires you can add energy to your steps and keep you motivated. Start with slower songs to get warmed up, and then higher energy ones when you want, kind of for the middle of the walk, when you want to be brisk, and then go back to some slower, more relaxing ones at the end of the walk. These are great ways to keep yourself out there getting the steps that you need to get in every day. The goal is 10,000 steps a day, so go for it. I'm out of time. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back again next week with another edition of Food for Thought. So I'll speak to you then. In the meantime, have a fabulous weekend. Enjoy this nice warm weather. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Food for Thought with Jolie Root, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Tune in again next time as Jolie Root sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. Food for Thought, Fridays at 10 a.m. on 1160 WVNJ.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are solely those of the host and not necessarily those of the station, its ownership, management, or staff.